The last passage of our Oracle Search. 398. He that hath ears to hear, let him hear what the Spirit of the doctrine saith to the sons of the discipline concerning the espousal of the lover to the beloved. For he had sowed his seed that there might ripen thereof threefold fruit, which the author of the three words saith to be three precious words, wherein is hidden all the science which is to be given to the pious, that is to the poor, from the first man even unto the last. Just some textual references. Son of the discipline, that's the alchemist. Notice again the word spirit in there. That's what we've been talking about. The espousal of the lover to the beloved, that's what we've been doing back and forth in this whole chapter, the spirit and matter uniting. For he hath sowed his seed. We've seen Sophia sows her seed, he sows his seed, which means there's an intermingling of matter and meaning. I'm just saying this to get us oriented. Three precious words would be Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Science would mean knowledge. Doesn't mean science like we mean not science. But that's just to get us going. So I'll read now. These concluding words of the text return to the recurrent motif of the seed and the ripening of threefold fruit. They seem to be, so that's what we've already said, the seed, the intermingling, and then threefold fruit, and we'll talk about it a little bit, but that's just the intermingling. But now comes the important sentence. They seem to me to contain an allusion to that unitary world, Unus Mundus, whose significance is discussed in Jung's commentary on Doran's text. In that potential unitary world, we are told, all the pious will be united outside time, for the Unus Mundus does not exist within the space-time continuum. Let's look at that pithy paragraph. Do you remember the three stages of the conjunctio? Unio mentalis, unio corporalis, and unus mundus. That's been the backbone to this whole essay. There's a conglomeration of understanding and experience that was in the first couple of chapters where he was overwhelmed. The unio mentalis is when the mind separates out from the chaos. That was the first couple of that was the chapter of the Holy Spirit, where he starts to try to put this in the context of the church. And that would be, I think, go up to the light of the sun and the moon in the treasure house of wisdom. That's the understanding that is coming to him. And then the unio corporalis is taking that understanding and putting it back into the body, into material reality, and so on, that we've been talking about the last couple of weeks. There's yet a final stage, which is the unus mundus, and that is when that understanding has become real, you might say, in the life of the person. And that understanding multiplies or echoes or ripples out into the world and produces a synchronistic effect in the world. Now, produces is just the wrong word, but because it's not a causal process, but might be better to say evokes or sets the precondition for the healing that's happened within to reflect on the outside. And that's all she is saying at the end of here, that there is a final stage of all this process where there's a synchronistic effect on the world. And she gets that by the allusion of the text here to a text of Gerhard Dorn, who's the guy who came up with these three stages of the conjunctio. And she cites that to show that there's yet a final stage. that make sense?
It's a little confusing when we talk about synchronicity being, you know, when the transcendent drops into reality.
Uh-huh.
And then with reconciling that with the statement that the unus mundus doesn't exist within the space-time continuum.
Yeah. It is confusing. And in a way, it's a contradiction, but the idea is that what drops into reality is that a priori pattern which was behind the process getting started in the first place. And it exists in and of itself beyond space and time. That is, before you were born, might be another way to put it. But at certain moments, it does drop into space and time, although it doesn't live there.
Its pattern becomes manifest.
Right.
So you could say that that's different from the whatever it is that generates this pattern.
Right. Whatever it is that generates this pattern, or this pattern which generates itself, is something beyond temporal conditions.
Well, does that mean that the seed, that we all have the seed within us to be, that it talks about here?
That would be the seed. Okay. Now, it's not all the seeds we've been talking about here, because they use seed in a bunch of different ways.
But, yes.
Yeah. But
okay.
The potential you.
Okay.
Right.
And it's from the time where, even before, you said something about before.
As far as she's concerned, it's there before time, mm-hmm. before you're born.
Mm-hmm.
That's the main point. Some auxiliary points are the Gnostic sense of this. I don't know how important that is to mention. For some of you, maybe it's interesting. This seed, which is ripening in the synchronistic moment, from one point of view, from other traditions, has been described as dropping into time and space. And that's what the Gnostics did. Just different ways of framing the same experience from different viewpoints. She says the same thing that I just said on 400. Go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 lines up from the bottom. This probably means that the divine ideas entering into a body produce the created world. That's the Gnostic take on all of this stuff. Now that's all kind of technical, but I think what's interesting is over on 401. Down at the bottom, many of these images, the last paragraph, in their ancient connotations, are preserved in the language of the Church Fathers. Now here we have just a little vocabulary mix-up. Corn does not mean corn like corn on the cob or maize. Corn, I think, actually, if you go to English, means the kernel of the grain. So
the corn is wheat. That's what they call
wheat. Yeah, but there's a corn of barley, there's a corn of wheat, there's a corn of... It's the seed you eat. And there's the corn of corn.
It's hulled wheat, then.
But it's not only wheat. It's only maybe in certain, certain places it is. But I think in its original meaning, that's why I just mentioned here. So when they talk about the corn of the wheat, It would be the...
The whole...
The munchiness of the wheat. The munchy wheat. Something, I don't know. And that's referred to as Christ. So Christ is the fruit. Who committed his body as a seed to the sterile field? So we're just using agricultural metaphors. Now on forward to. I skip a couple of lines. Like a grain of wheat falling into the earth, Christ fell into the underworld. It rose up like a sheaf as the new bread. That's all preparatory to get to the sentence at the bottom of that paragraph, which I just think is interesting. It's nothing earth-shaking. And as Honorarius of Autun says in his, whatever it is, Lucidarium, and as bread is made up of many grains, so is the body of Christ gathered together from many elect ones.
I had a question like that.
That's Gnostic.
Gnostic, which means?
We have to reassemble God. Does this sound like nonsense? Do I need to explain this, or does this make sense to everybody? Yeah. So like grain is made up, so like bread is made up of many grains, so Christ as grain and bread-like is made up of many grains. And just like you have to add many grains to the bread, you have to add the aggregate souls of the believers together to make Christ. Well, for this Gnostic way of looking at what Christ is. It's just a different way of looking at what Christ is, that's all. Which is the spiritual church. Well, she goes into that because... of the image of the seed at the beginning of that passage, and just tries to show by association to other traditions what's all involved with that seed image, that it links up with the idea that the sacred thing isn't a man somewhere, but it's the community of people who have received something divine. So that last passage not only introduces the idea of the Unus Mundus, but the idea of the spiritual church, Ecclesia Church, Spiritualis Church. Again, compensating the traditional idea that a church is a building, and that within his psyche is a propensity to define the church as something else. Or maybe even to say community is something else. You know, people have said to me, well, what do you think is going to happen if, what's going to happen to the church if we realize that God is a projection? And I think this is an answer. It will not cease to exist, but it will not exist as a thing. It will be a place where people with a certain shared experience want to be together. And it will not have the function of mediating the mystery. It'll be the place where people who have experienced the mystery go to share together. Just a thought.
Once describing the mission statement, I'll just use this term, it's a revelation monastery. And it's where people go who feel like they revelation, for lack of a better word, have had a direct experience with the divine, to just come and share their story, to create a community around this experience, which is uniquely theirs and yet shared among all. So I think it's already getting out there.
Well, I find, in my experience, the community is one of the biggest passwords in the church right now.
Bigger passwords?
Yeah, I mean, everything is community now. Huh. And somebody said that's because we know we can't visualize God out there anymore because God is too much. Mm-hmm. We have to find God within.
Mm-hmm.
And this is common in many denominations.
Mm.
So that's where calming comes from, a little bit of mother, huh?
You could be a servant of this.
Three, 403, last page bullet. The fact that he concludes with Caleb's three precious words, first full paragraph. Now, Caleb is an alchemist. It's referred to on, I think, page 10. We hear about him way back, and he's the author of this three words. Shows that he understood the Ecclesia Spiritualis specifically as a community of all those who are enlightened by the Holy Spirit. So she's just continuing to make her point.
You said three words that he was...
His book is called Three Words.
Oh, okay.
She mentions it on page 10. You don't have to look, but... if you want to check it out, as one of her sources. Caleb, who elsewhere cited by name, wrote the author of the three words. So I don't. I was thinking he's an alchemist. Maybe he's not. Maybe he's. Either he's an alchemist or he's a medieval theologian, one or the other. But that's not important. It's just she's using the reference to show that these two new or this new idea at the end of the text, the spiritual church. And his allusion to the transfiguration of Christ and the hint that the community of the pious and the poor lives on in secret emphasizes that this final solution was essentially an inner and spiritual realization. A lot of words just saying, new dimension introduced in this last part, Unus Mundus and Ecclesia Spiritualis. So I think the last really pertinent section is that where she says, in conclusion, third full paragraph. In conclusion, we may say that the final parable presents the following picture. Two transcendent archetypal figures celebrating a hero's gamos, and the author is somehow included in their mystic union. That should make sense. So that's the back and forth we've been talking about. What had been hinted in the parable of the treasure house of wisdom. Remember, that was the high point of the text, where it's the light from the union of the sun and the moon. What had been hinted in the parable of the treasure house of wisdom, that this union was the God image par excellence, is now revealed in all clarity. God is made manifest in the two-in-oneness of lover and beloved, or the interpenetration of spirit and matter. That is to be the new God image, or dimension of the new God image. And that's it.
Yeah. Want to see what the painting turned out to be?
Yes.
Okay.
Couldn't think of a better thing to do.
I'll put it over here. As long as the window doesn't
that.
Can you see past me?
There, now is the reflection off of it? Not really.
Excellent case, even.
Well, I don't know, maybe you just have to move around so you can see it. Because, well, you know how I found out that this place I've been painting is sacred to the Navajo? Well, I did a little research on that, and I found out that the Navajo have a figure called the Changing Woman and the Spider Woman. And those two women together seem to be two figures that embody Sophia. And I read that the Spider Woman lives in a circular hole in the ground, okay, in a subterranean chamber. And she's an old woman, and she gives instruction on how to navigate one's fate. And the Changing Woman is a personification of the earth, which I take that to be the other figure. You know, it seems as though the hole is where the Spider Woman is. And then the pregnant figure seems to be the Changing Woman, and she's personification of the earth, and she embodies the earth's power of rejuvenation. And she represents dynamic order, you know, this reminds me of number and time here, or order being continuously recreated through time. So she's also related to a causal orderedness and synchronicity. And she's the source of life and the giver of destiny to all beings. And you know how I don't know if you remember, but this painting started with the idea of the four elements. The secret fire had the four elements, and this to me was air. And it's as though air is coming up through there. So I did a little research on air, and there's a Rosicrucian document that is based on the Emerald Tablet, and it talks about the function of air. And it says that air is a necessary part of the functioning of the body. It says, for it is air that binds the heavens and the earth, that separates the heights from the depths, and yet also joins them. It receives a certain substance from the earth below, and at the same time hermetically transfuses the strength of the stars to the earth. And in our text, she talks about the stars being equivalent to the flowers. She says, the flowers correspond to the stars with which they are connected through the medium of the air.
What page is
that? 392.
Uh-huh.
In the footnote. So here our text is relating those ideas of the air and the stars as a marriage of heaven and earth. She says, so they're connected through the medium of the air, as heaven is married to earth, having for a bridesman Mercury, and she goes on. So that air seems to be somehow a factor in the union of above and below. And there's one more place. Oh, and she talks about stars. What are those stars? And she says they represent a component of our psychic totality, or components of our psychic totality. So in my fantasy, these stars are coming up, and they're being collected in that egg up there that she's holding. So it's as though she's collecting the components of one's psychic totality.
Absolutely.
And then she goes on in our text to say that the egg is the germ of conscious realization of the self. So in the egg, she's collecting the psychic totality for realization of the self. And also, she's the vessel. You know, where he talks about, in our text, they talk about the vas
how do you say that, conjunctiones?
The...
Thus.
Oh, vos conjunctiones?
Conjunctiones. So there, I think she's portrayed as that vessel. But one thing that struck me about this painting, I don't know if you guys remember Midnight Jeweler. Do you remember that painting?
Just in case you don't. Where the drops are coming down.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And here it is. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys remember. Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm. The drops are coming down, and, you know, Gary said, well, that's Sophia. But here now, it's like there's been some sort of reversal, and the elements are floating out. And there's that same pregnant figure, too, working the whole thing. So some going up and going down seems to be indicated in this whole process. But in my mind, this is only stage two, and there should be two more.
I can't wait.
So, well, this started more series and other series. Are you saying two more paintings? Two more paintings, because these paintings, we got to the point in the text of the treasure house,
right?
And then I felt a breaking away from the imagery.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the painting Secret Fire had been completed.
Mm-hmm.
And then the breaking away began, this painting began.
Okay.
And when I was making Secret Fire, that's the four elements together.
Mm-hmm.
And the Secret Fire, we had read in the text, is the thing that brings the elements together.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt the urge to make each element separately, and this is air.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing that comes up is air. Mm-hmm. And in the Navajo myths, the Spider Woman lives in this circular hole in the ground, and always there is smoke coming up from her hole, which I suppose is symbolic of how she manifests those components of the psyche, so to speak. I don't know, I'm just beginning to look into the symbolism of it, you know, but that's as far as I've gotten with what I've been able to find. And I think that the stars, you notice they're all a different color.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's personal. Don't you, Gary?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm asking you as a Jungian analyst here. But I mean, the fact that the arrangement of the colors.
I didn't even notice they were different colors.
Oh, sorry.
There's red, pink, there's...
Well, there's sort of a... There's green on the bottom.
Green,
and a red, a red, blue, and a yellow on top.
So green, blue.
So I'm thinking that's personal. The arrangement of the color of the stars, I'm thinking is personal.
And what would it be?
Because I'm an intuitive. And the greens are, or the yellow's already in the egg.
I see.
That's intuition.
Yeah.
Blue, thinking. Red, feeling. Green, sensation. I don't know. That's just something that struck me after I... So that part might be personal, that arrangement of the color of the stars.
But not as you were doing the painting. No. You painted the colors, and then you thought of that afterwards, about the personal.
The painting dictated where the colors had to be, and then afterwards I thought, oh,
mm-hmm.
that kind of describes me.
This brings up what we did right at the end. I was thinking about the, in the past, the oaten cakes, or the symbol for the sacrifice in Dionysus. The host is the sacrifice in the Catholicism. And it occurred to me when you were talking about community that maybe it's not one thing for everybody, but each individual story, each individual will have their own symbol, and that maybe this is yours. I don't know.
Well, I feel like there are personal but most of it doesn't seem personal. The arrangement of the stars feels personal,
mm-hmm.
but since so much of it is described in the text and in the Navajo myth, It doesn't seem mostly personal. It seems mostly archetypal. I don't know.
Carol, when you were reading the Navajo myths, did you come upon the different levels and worlds?
Yes. And I thought
that you've got the very last one was the little hole that she had to come through to come into this world.
I thought about that too. Right. They had to find these little holes to come up mm-hmm. to different levels of consciousness. And yet in their other myths, the spider woman always lives in this hole down there.
I'd read about it in a book out there called The Knitting Goddess, which odd thing, but they talked spider woman would definitely have to do with knitting kind of thing, or you know, things to do with yarn, but they also talked about always leaving a hole so she can come and go and bring information in. And so when in the weaving, in anything, you've always got to leave a space for her to be able to move in and out of the world. That's nice.
Really get your smell is the way you see the air, but it's also your what comes to you, perhaps that's your oxygen, your own cooking.
Yeah, it's like the steam rising from a cooking pot mm-hmm. or something, mm-hmm. or vapors. So in The Midnight Jeweler, there was a galaxy that was being poured into, and now there's a galaxy that's emitting.
Very important.
And you can see, it almost looks to me like she's taken that egg from her own stomach. You see that front part of her stomach where it looks like something's been detached, mm-hmm. and yet she's still perfectly shaped. It's like, you know, she can take each one of us out and form our egg, you know, over and over and over and over again, and yet her stomach is never depleted.
That's beautiful.
I hadn't noticed before the shape of where that belly, that semicircle, it's very similar to the one up here where she's working.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So did it come in her ear too?
It looks like it came from below.
I didn't hear the question.
Back farther where it talks about how spirit comes in, came in
through. Oh, the through the ear.
From the paintings, it seems like she's a figure that's eternally pregnant.
Okay.
I don't know, maybe not. But
I like that interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, what I like is the. We've been talking about Sophia is a spirit that goes from the ground up.
And she's emerged from that. It appears to me that she's emerged up from that vessel, that urn, that the rocks form as a negative shape.
Uh-huh.
So she's below, she's in a paradoxical place. Because she's below the level of the earth, and yet she's on the earth. Because that's what a slot canyon is. It's a very narrow, deep canyon. And if you stand on the bottom of the slot canyon, you are standing on the top of the earth, and yet you're below the earth.
Yeah.
And that, the painting, the yellow star in the egg reminds me of that Hindu symbol, Hiranyagarbha, the golden seed, which is the seed of the cosmos. I think she mentions it in here. Or, oh, it might have been something else I was reading.
Might have been in there.
It's in the golden flower.
Oh, it is in the golden flower.
So anyway, that's step two, I guess, as far beautiful. As my fantasy is
beautiful,
concerned.
Beautiful, beautiful,
beautiful. Oh, you did? Yeah. What?
Down here.
You saw, now show me again.
It looks like, I don't know, I saw it as a figure that has his hand, arm stretched around the pot, and then his shoulder comes up here, and his head is here, and it's like he's wrapped. When I looked at it, it was like, oh my God, the wound is male. And I don't know where that is coming from. But anyway.
Can't see him.
Maybe you can't see from here.
Thank you. Thoughts, feelings, comments, reactions? Besides major relief.
I'd like for you to comment just on the very, very last of the steps where she's talking about this extension of the individual consciousness. It might very well
where is
be
that point?
At 403, at the bottom of 403.
Where
there would be an abnormal psychic state, but the accumulation of those peace, which in other realms of thought are connected with death, suggests rather that it was an ecstatic or delirious state experience in the, I don't know what that is.
Something
to death.
Yeah.
And then indeed the individuation process, which is here reflected in the alchemical symbolism, is in a sense a preparation for death, at the natural end of a process whose goal is the fullest possible development of all the potentialities inherent in the personality. Is she talking about him there? The Thomas?
Oh, I think.
Recorded Thomas?
I think she's saying that even though he is not consciously realizing this, this is a process running through him, which one could become aware of and respond to and integrate. And what that process wants is the full development of the personality. And so we're studying these images as working in him, even though he's not doing it. That's what I get out of it. It's him, it's anyone in whom that process gets started. It's the individuation process, or at least an aspect of it.
And then she's saying that, you know, this lasts until the time of death, that all of what we're about is a preparation for death?
Yep.
Yep.
Jung even said that. All therapy is a preparation for death. Meaning, I think, that what it wants us to do is become so satisfied with what we've done here that we're ready to move on. So ironically, death, which you think of as extinction, is also fulfillment, because you can die when you're fulfilled. I've watched a couple of people die who hadn't lived. It's not a pretty picture. And so you can see that what we're doing is committing ourselves to this earth so that we can fully live here. And then when we're finished what we're here for, we can go on to the next stage, which I'm sure is the next stage. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would think it's worth it, honestly. Why don't you just check out, you know? But because you don't check out. you go to another room. And you have some control over how you're going to feel in that other room by what you complete here.
And you don't think that other room is right back there again?
Well, who knows? You mean like reincarnation?
Uh-huh.
Maybe, but it may take a while.
Are there a lot of rooms that you can touch?
Yeah.
You know, depending on what you do here.
Well, if you do ascribe to reincarnation, there's usually a time in between.
Yeah.
There that one, rumor hath it that one does during these in-between parts and kind of figures out, well, what did I get out of this one? Well, what do I want to do
yeah.
for the next one? And, you know, there's some resting and some studying.
Maybe that seed which was planted in us.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. How far did I get in making that seed grow? I tend to think, from things I've seen of folks near death or contemplating suicide, that if you're not happy here, it doesn't get any better when you're dead. So if you think you're getting out by killing yourself, it's a sad lesson, I think, when you get over there and you realize, oh gosh, I'm just as unhappy here as I am. I was, and I missed my chance to make it better.
You say you take yourself wherever you go.
Yeah.
I told you about my friend who committed suicide in her bedroom. Her husband said he came back to you in the world. And he said, you can't stay. And she just sadly didn't want to go.
Yeah.
I had a friend that's, dreamt about another friend of ours who had committed suicide, and he was in, at this point, the one who dreamt was in a very sad, depressed state, thinking about committing suicide himself, and he dreamt about this other friend, and the other friend said, don't do it, it's not, no, I shouldn't have, I made a mistake, don't do it.
Mm-hmm. I told a dream I saw of a guy who was contemplating suicide, and in the dream, he had killed himself. And he went to his funeral. And he said, if I'm dead, how can I be at this funeral? Then he realized, but that death wasn't the extinction of awareness. Death was only the extinction of free choice. And the misery he had when he committed suicide was the misery he'd be living with for eternity. The only thing he had lost was his ability to change it. And he woke up. So that's relevant, I think, to the end of the passage, because we're trying to make it so that it doesn't have to be a bowl of cherries here, but that, like you said, that the plant has grown the best you could, allow it to grow, help it to grow, and so when you cross over, it's not so bad over there. Whether you come back again, I don't know. I wouldn't doubt it, but I just don't know. But from what I've seen from dreams, you do take over there what you leave here with. And I think that's why ultimately this is worth it, and probably why the text ends about death.
Haven't you ever met somebody though that you feel, oh, there you are again? You know, I've known you before, and here we're again. We're joining in, or we're going to know each other again. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like a recognition kind of thing.
Yeah, I do know that. Anything else? Thank you for your hard work. It's been a pleasure.